for some of the folks, there are some folks who have done it already. Rainer is renewing from right here in the north part of Portland and has been listening a very long time and really likes KBOO. Well, I'm so glad that you like it, and I'm so glad, Rainer, that you have done what it takes to make sure that you can continue to like KBOO. And why not like KBOO on Facebook, too? If you're on Facebook, log on right now, go to, and search it for KBOO Community Radio, and like KBOO's page. And Ian is a brand new member. Thank you. Welcome, Ian. Welcome from Vancouver to a more active and participation in what you call your favorite station. I suppose you mean radio station. That's right. Thank you so much for jumping in, making that transition from a passive listener to an active member. I'd sure like to hear about you becoming an active member right now at 877-500-5266. We're about to move on to a bit more of what we're asking you to support, so I want you to make that call right now so you don't miss a single thing. Call now, 877-500-5266, online at kboo.fm/give.
This is Love Jones, producer of the world-famous Confessional. This year, Contessa de la Luna brings you a real, bona fide Wild West jamboree and variety show. We've got live performances by Contessa de la Luna and Courtney Vondrell from Three Leg Torso, plus audience lasso contests, sock puppet theater, surprise fun box drawing, many other prizes. We've got performances by the Sea Charms and a selfie booth with Contessa de la Luna. We've got plenty of surprises and fun in store, so mark your calendars Thursday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds benefit KBOO, your community radio station. Tickets are available now online at contessawestern.brownpapertickets.com or at the door the night of the event. Get your hat, get your spurs, and come on down Thursday, February 9th at the Clinton Street Theater starting at 7 p.m. Contessa de la Luna's Wild West Jamboree, an old-time variety show.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Grand Central Bakery, with multiple locations throughout Portland. Open every day 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and offering coffee, artisan breads, pastries, soups, and sandwiches. Lunch was provided by Namaste Indian Cuisine, located at 1403 Northeast Widler Street. Open every day with lunch and dinner buffets serving vegetarian and non-vegetarian items from 11 to 9:30 p.m. Dinner was provided by Karam Lebanese and Syrian Cuisine, located at 515 Southwest 4th Avenue. Open Monday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday till 10 p.m., and Sunday 2 to 9 p.m., offering a wide selection of traditional Lebanese and Syrian dishes.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
There's terror in our midst. Could be one of us. Behind you in the line, or beside you on the bus. Wearing camouflage, they might be wearing suits. These terrorists among us might be wearing army boots. These are dangerous times, and people are afraid. No looking back at history to see how enemies were made. Some dictators are bad, some dictators are good. That's a hard one to explain, but I wish somebody would. So let us all agree, let us not dissent. Let us not ask questions such as where our freedoms went. We'll just fly, fly the flag, sing God Bless America, question people's patriotism.
And good morning, you are back at Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO. If you were listening to the folk strip earlier, you heard that song in its entirety, and you can listen to it in its entirety by going to kbo.fm and look at that, at the listen to that show again. That's Chuck Brodsky with Dangerous Times. And these are dangerous times, and this is the radio station that tries to help us all navigate our way through these dangerous times. And we are pleased and privileged to have with us my old friend Jeffrey St. Clair, the one of the people behind Counterpunch website and newsletter, and books as well. And he's written many books himself. And we go way back. I'm not sure we've been on the radio since about 20 years ago. Anyway, I better call him up. Let's go back to the music. Goodness gracious, I've never done that before. Let's go back to hear a little more Dangerous Times while I get Jeffrey on the phone.
We're gonna build them schools. We're gonna build them banks. We're gonna build them pipelines from their fields to our tanks. Now my heart goes out to Johnny, sent off into war. They convince him it's for freedom that he's laid his life down for. My thoughts are often with him, and I pray he comes home safe. And I pray for every innocent laid early in the grave. And who was in your house while you were at home? Look through your computer and through everything you own. What do they want to know? Which websites do you...
Okay, we're back. Let's try that again. This is Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, Paul Rowland. And I have with us a very special guest this morning, my old friend, Jeffrey St. Clair, who lives just up the river from Portland, where I am, in Oregon City. But he's having some serious problems with flooding and furnace issues, and worrying about whether his house will slide down into the canyon. Anyway, good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning, Paul. Really, I'm worried about what happens afterwards and, you know, what a Trump FEMA camp's going to be like.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, the FEMA camps, you know, we all were sort of, you know, sort of a little bit... laughing at the people who tended to talk most vociferously about them, who are probably the people least likely to end up in the FEMA camps, let's be honest. But indeed, these are strange and dangerous times, as the song I started out with. But let's go back. We're going to be talking about your book, Bernie and the Sandinistas, Field Notes from a Failed Revolution, of which we have several copies of for... the first five callers who are going to call us up at that number, which we'll remind you of oh so shortly. But before we go to our first membership break, which will come up very soon, we did a show together here on KBOO. I think, when was that? That was in the late 90s, right?
Yeah, it was in the late 90s. It was called Nature and Politics, wasn't it?
Well, Nature, Politics, and the Press. We kind of added that because your column, I believe it was a weekly column you did with Alexander Coburn called Nature and Politics?
Yeah, we did a weekly column. It was fun. That was during the glory days of the 90s when neoliberalism really had the left in a death embrace, I think.
And kind of set the stage for Trumpism, let's be honest.
It certainly did. It in more ways, I think, you know, one of the things that we were really trying to probe then was what was happening to, I guess, the left as, you know, the Democratic Party became, you know, a Clinton operation, and just was, you know, the purging of the base had begun, and the wholesale turnover to, you know, the corporations had begun. It was a really interesting transitional time that I think, you know, was certainly a kind of wormhole to the future, if you like.
And I think the first time I may have actually had you on was around the time of the Forest Summit or Timber Summit, when because you were one of the few people who was really talking about sort of the politics of the environment and critiquing severely the Democratic Party for the big environmental groups for being so cozy with the Democratic Party, and how Bill Clinton basically started out as more of a somewhat of a populist progressive and basically sold out to the timber industry in Arkansas, and you nailed that even well before he became president.
Yeah, that's actually how Alex and I kind of hooked up. He had read a series of articles that I had written in a radical environmental journal that I was editing here in Portland called Wild Forest Review on Clinton's environmental record in Arkansas. And what a lot of people didn't know was that the largest landowner in Arkansas was the Weyerhaeuser Corporation, and that in Clinton's first term as governor, he tried to impose some minor restrictions on Weyerhaeuser, like limiting the size of their clear cuts from, you know, an infinite number of acres, you know, to 100 acres in size, or getting a few feet of trees left as stream buffers. And they took him down. It was one of the reasons Bill lost when he ran for re-election. And that loss left an indelible imprint on his politics. And he returned a transformed man. And he just began sucking up to the corporations. Weyerhaeuser was the first one, but not the only one, because you might recall Tyson Foods, the big chicken killing company, and they were headquartered in Arkansas. And at the time, they just wanted to allow the refuse from their, you know, chicken, you know, factory farms to run directly into the White River and just completely toxify it. And, you know, Bill gave them the green light. Then it was on to deals with Walmart and Jackson Stevens Investments. And, you know, he was just on his way to bigger and greater things.
And and Hillary, he took Hillary along for the ride. And of course,
she was, you know, working at Rose Law and, you know, then ended up on the board of Walmart. And, you know, they were a power couple from the American outback.
Indeed, and we'll take that up to the present, and then how the dirty politics within the Democratic Party helped defeat Bernie Sanders. But of course, as you talk about in your book, he also helped defeat himself, and all of that set the stage for the very dismal Steve Bannon show that we're having to endure and confront. But we are also in our membership drive, and we are talking about with Jeffrey St. Clair, as I said, editor of Counterpunch, who himself depends upon the support of people like you and me. But we're talking about the support of KBOO Radio right now, and you go into the phone and calling 877-500-5266 and potentially calling and getting a copy of Bernie and the Sandernistas, Field Notes from a Failed Revolution, which we're talking more about. And we're also talking with Sam.
Good morning, Paul, and good morning to you, my friends and neighbors, listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM or KB online at kboo.fm. And why not just click on that donate? That's right, because why would you do that? Well, for one thing, to keep a fierce and independent electronic media resource like KBOO present and vital for another year right here in Portland Metro. You know, there are so many ways to take in media, yet so much of it sounds the same. They tell the same story. And KBOO offers many stories from many perspectives, one of which is from Mr. Jeffrey St. Clair, our guest this morning on Talk Radio, which is part of the AM News and Public Affairs block here on KBOO. And that's possible with your support. And if that's not quite enough for you, maybe you want a little icing on your KBOO cake, why not make sure that you throw in $75 to the pot and ask the volunteer who takes your call to include for you a copy of Bernie and the Sandernistas by Jeffrey St. Clair. How about you do that right now? How can you make that happen? Well, you start with your telephone at 877-500-5266 and ask the volunteer who takes your call at 877-500-5266 to include with your membership in the KBOO Foundation a copy of Bernie and the Sandernistas, a very interesting looking book authored by today's guest, Jeffrey St. Clair. Public affairs hosts and reporters just like Paul. You know, Paul's a volunteer. I'm a volunteer. Why don't you volunteer a few dollars to support the work that all these volunteers are doing? Community members and neighbors bringing you news and information that's relevant to your life and based in your community, just like today's guest. That's right, 877-500-5266. These conversations, like the one that Paul is having with Mr. St. Clair, happen here thanks to the financial support of our listeners. That's you. Contribute now. Contribute now to support radio that doesn't shy away from difficult topics or differing opinions. That's right. 877-500-5266. We're putting a microphone in front of people who have something useful and important to say. And microphones cost money too. 877-500-5266. Thank you for listening. Thank you for support. Thank you, Mr. St. Clair, for joining us this morning. And thank you, Paul, for making room for him.
All right. And thank you, Sam. We're back and we're talking with Jeffrey St. Clair, editor-in-chief of Counterpunch, for many years co-editor with Alexander Coburn. We start out talking about how you did your column, Nature and Politics, which I believe was before doing Counterpunch. I knew you when you were doing Wild Forest Review, because, of course, I was very active in the forest protection movement here in Oregon. And I was also very critical. There was a small group of us who was very, from a grassroots perspective, critical of the big environmental groups and their tendency to sort of take over movements and kill them off, essentially, is what has happened over and over again. And we don't seem to learn our lesson very well. And so you... again, we had that radio show briefly, a half-hour spot for a better part of a year, where we talked about some of these topics that we're talking about now and how the press is dealing with things. And then you went on, of course, to join Alexander Coburn on Counterpunch, and you co-wrote some books with Alexander, Whiteout, the CIA Drugs and the Press, a history of the CIA's ties to drug gangs from World War I to the Mujahideen and the Nicaraguan Contras. This was followed by A Field Guide to Environmental Bad Guys. And then 5 Days That Shook the World, Seattle and Beyond. And also Al Gore, A User's Manual.
Yeah, that was a great disappointment. You know, we had we really rushed to get the Gore biography done. And, you know, we miraculously met our deadlines, always a difficult task with Coburn. And then he ends up losing the election. I think we had one review saying it was the most hostile biography ever written of an American politician. Maybe an overstatement, but we took some pride in that. Although Al Gore, doing what Gore does, lose elections that, you know, he was, you know, he had every reason to win. It blew the chances of that book ever having any shelf life. We thought of, you know, publishing a paperback, and it was called Al Gore, A User's Manual, and just, you know, changing user to loser. But Bursa wouldn't go along with that. You know, they didn't think anybody would be interested in Al Gore again. But,
so I guess you learned your lesson and didn't do a Hillary Clinton, A User's Manual.
We were very close, but, you know, if there was any politician who shared all of Al Gore's flaws and then some, it was Hillary. So no, decided Bernie was putting all my money on Bernie.
So, and of course, and as you say somewhere in this article, that magic feeling, the strange mystique of Bernie Sanders, which came out in mid-December, which is an excerpt from your book, Bernie and the Sandernisos, which we're going to have you read a little bit of, because I really am an admirer of your prose. I hope you don't mind me saying that on the air here. You said that you were as well taken in by the mystique of Bernie Sanders. I mean, taken in, that seems a little bit like a snide comment. I mean, there's lots of good reasons that we all supported, many of us supported Bernie Sanders, because he was a much more, an actual human being, and a much more sympathetic and compelling political figure, certainly than any of the rest of the field that was offered, except for perhaps, Green Party and some of the other minor party candidates that unfortunately don't have a ghost of a chance in this system that we have.
Right. Well, I mean, I'll have to say that, I had a kind of jaundiced view of Bernie from the beginning, because we had written about him almost his entire political career, and Coburn knew Sanders pretty well, because Coburn basically for many decades spent his summers in Vermont. So he knew Bernie from the days when he was the mayor of Burlington. But when Counterpunch first started, one of our biggest stories when we went on online was, and that was in basically in 99, if you all remember the Bill Clinton's last war, the Kosovo war, bombing student protesters, on bridges and in Serbia. What a thing. But Bernie had just been elected to Congress then, and one of his first major votes was on whether to endorse Clinton's war against Serbia. So here's Bernie, the independent socialist from Vermont, voting to bomb an independent socialist country. I mean, it just seemed like a terrible way to inaugurate your political career in Washington. And in fact, many of his staffers resigned over that, including Jeremy Brecher, a great labor historian. And that was really, the first major piece that we ran online for Counterpunch. We, of course, had the print edition for many years before that. So, we kind of started with Bernie at the very beginning. But still, I did succumb to the Bernie thing.
Hold that thought. We'll get back to that soon. And we are in our membership drive, so we have abbreviated public affairs programming because of that, because of the importance of reaching out to our listeners and asking you to be part of this long tried and true experiment of listener-sponsored community radio, which supports us and keeps us going and keeps programs like this on the air. Right, Sam?
That is, in fact, correct, Paul. And thank you again to Mr. Sinclair for joining us this morning. That means KBOO, that means the audience, that means everyone tuned in. And that means you, friends and neighbors, and it's time for you to renew your membership in the KBOO Foundation. It is time for you over there to make that transition from passive listener to active member, excuse me. And just like Maggie renewed her membership from Hood River, and she's a big fan of Democracy Now!, which we heard earlier this morning, noting that that its coverage of Standing Rock is better than anyone's. I imagine. Okay, and it's time for you. There's a couple of folks on the phone right now. My friends Bill and Michelle and Stephanie are fielding those calls the best they can. If you're having trouble getting through, please do not give up. Just try again and again and again, because that's what it takes. Everyone doing what's necessary to keep this station going, to keep it fierce and independent, so that we can bring you the, what would we call it? complicated issues. We can bring you strong opinions and heated debates. We jump into such conversations because we know they help all of us learn. And we know that you're open to hearing something that might challenge your own beliefs. That's right. And the right level of support for such an endeavor is different for every KBOO listener. Everyone's contribution makes a huge difference. And we are asking you, I'm asking you right now, to join all of your friends and neighbors who have become members right now. Become a member yourself. 877-500-5266. Why is that so important? Because just the physical infrastructure, a transmitter and a translator, that tower way up on Council Bluff there, where KBOO's antenna is to broadcast as far and wide as possible, that costs approximately $56,000 every year. I'm not going to ask any one of you to foot that bill all by yourself. If you can, we'll take it. I know that somebody has $500 and is looking for a place to put it. Why not put it into your community radio right now? 877-500-5266. My friend Paul is having a conversation via telephone with Mr. Jeffrey St. Clair, author of Bernie and the Sandinistas. And, you know, our phone bill is pretty, and internet is pretty significant. That's $25,000. I'm not going to ask any one of you to front that all by yourself. I'm asking everybody. I'm asking all 55,000 people who are listening at any one time to put in, let's say, $10 a month. That will put a huge dent in that. 877-500-5266. General utilities like lights, water, heat, $32,500. Again, no one of you is responsible for that. It's something we all share. It's a responsibility that we all take on. 877-500-5266. You know, I share the cost of shelter with a couple other folks. One of those other folks has a great saying, teamwork don't seem work. So join our team right now, 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to some more of Paul and Jeffrey St. Clair talking about Bernie and the Sandinistas. Why not call right now and put up $75 and get your own copy of that book? Let's hear a bit more about it while you make that call.
All right. Thank you, Sam. 877-500-5266. We're talking about a lot of things. I just want to let people know that you may have heard already that the Army Corps of Engineers did grant the easement to Energy Transfer Partners to drill under the Missouri River to complete the Dakota Access Pipeline through treaty lands. And to basically curtail the environmental review that Obama, under great pressure, had put in place. We kind of expected it. It happened. The fight continues today at 12 p.m. at the Army Corps building at North Lloyd Boulevard and Northeast 11th Avenue. There will be a emergency no DAPL rally. Bring something warm to drink. Be prepared for some rain. Bring your no DAPL signs or borrow one from the people there. We need to make a clear statement to the Army Corps and the world that we oppose the illegal drilling of the Dakota Access Pipeline on treaty lands and under and around the Missouri River. One of the two main sources of water for this country, as well as being a sacred river of the tribes that live along its shores. There must be an end to corporate greed and control indeed. And tomorrow, that's today at 12 p.m., tomorrow at Mother Foucault's bookshop at 523 Southeast Morrison Street, Against the Fascist Creep, by my friend Alexander Reed Ross. What better way to celebrate the timely arrival of a new book than with an old-fashioned book opening? There'll be live music, and the author of Against the Fascist Creep, which details the rise of fascism, the conditions that facilitated its arrival, and the forces that brought it down. So those are a couple events. There's many others, of course, always in town. You can always let me know what's going on by writing me at paulrkboo@gmail.com. So, Jeffrey, I was hoping you would read a little bit from this book, if you've got it right in front of you.
I do. And you can have it in front of you. What is that? $75. You can get a copy of this wonderful book, Bernie and the Sandinistas. Donate to KBOO, the best independent radio in the Pacific Northwest. So, Paul and KBOO listeners, let me take you back to the days just after the New York primary. If Bernie's blitz through New York was a time of swelling optimism for his campaign, it was also a moment of peak delusion. Bernie had lost the nomination well before he ended up losing New York in something of Clinton rout. In fact, the campaign had been over since Super Tuesday, when HRC marched almost unopposed across the South, racking up an insurmountable delegate lead. But the revolution he talked about was defunct the moment Sanders elected to run as a Democrat, a decision he doubled down on months later when he rebuffed Jill Stein's offer to head the Green Party ticket, and then chose to endorse Hillary Clinton without equivocation on primetime TV at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia. That fateful decision left a pall of evil hanging over the elections, a palpable evil, an evil you could smell. Even many of Hillary's backers knew she was a force of evil. It's why they talk so openly and frantically about the logic of lesser evil voting. They knew she couldn't be trusted, that whatever Faustian deal she struck with Bernie Sanders would not be honored. They knew that Clinton lied smoothly, effortlessly, and icily, that she lied about big and small matters, from her Goldman speeches to the TPP, from her personal finances to her role in Libya, from her emails to the DNC's plot to get Bernie. Yes, even Democratic Party loyalists acknowledged her evil ways. But could they really be sure deep down that she was truly the lesser evil? What kind of complex calculus yielded the proof? For the Democrats, the greater evil was Donald Trump, who seemed to rise like some monstrous dirigible on the same political air currents that had sent Sanders aloft. The two outsiders were, in a sense, alter egos, Sanders's Dr. Jekyll to Trump's Mr. Hyde. They spoke about many of the same issues, the same frustrations with the economic and political condition of the country, but they spoke to strikingly different audiences and in different tones. Trump prevailed because he was willing, indeed eager, to burn down the Republican Party house with him. Sanders failed in large part because he wasn't. Even when the Democratic Party house, run with the ruthless calculation of any casino, conspired against him. Trump burst on the scene like a character out of a Burroughs novel, a narcissistic junkie, desperate for his next fix of publicity, jittery, unpredictable, obscene, petulant, and brutal, and impossible not to watch. There was a dark and dangerous erotic charge to Trump that was lacking in his rivals, especially from Sanders and Clinton, both of whom projected antiseptic and asexual personas. Trump, on the other hand, admitted the powerful pheromones of doom. At times, it was hard to tell whether Trump was running a political campaign or directing a political stunt film. At Sanders' events, all the erotic charge surged not from the candidate himself, but from the energized crowd. His rallies were intense experiences that often felt like political raves. They vibrated, the crowds grooving to that magic feeling.
And then you talk about Hillary naturally projected the severe aridity of a tax auditor.
I don't know. That's how she's kind of always struck me.
And so, you know, it seems like almost cruel sort of rehashing this now that we're you know, facing what we're facing now, the reality of it. But, you know, that what we do often is we sort of forget how we got here, and then so we sort of replay the same things over and over again, which has sort of been a theme, you know, of your continual critiques of the environmental movement, again, and the Democratic Party, and, you know, basically all these institutions which basically operate on seemingly very similar power principles. You know, Machiavellian.
Well, you know, my favorite philosopher is it's Michel Foucault, who's, you know, was a bold gay Frenchman who spoke in, you know, a kind of weird artificial rhetoric, but he could get right to the point sometimes. And he said, it's resistance that unites us. So I'm glad to see resistance sprouting up. Even if I ask myself, where was this resistance for 8 years under Obama? You know, we resist Trump's wall. Where was the resistance to Obama as deporter-in-chief when he was turning back Honduran children at the border or locking up and detaining more people than even George W. Bush? Where was the anti-war movement under Obama? You know, I mean, we know now that in his last year in office, the Peace Prize president, you know, ordered 13,000 bombing raids. Now, that sets a pretty high standard for Trump, you know, to exceed. Where was the anti-war movement? Now, I know that there are some of us who resisted from day one, right? And there are Catholic workers, there are the Quakers, there are the socialists, and they're out there, even here in Oregon City, the original stump town, we like to call it. You know, there are four or five people out on the block protesting, you know, every Monday outside the Unitarian Church. God bless them. But why weren't there 500,000 people on the Mall protesting Obama?
Illusions.
That's the question for the resistance to ask itself now as it's rebuilding itself. And can that happen within the context of a Democratic Party which has chosen as its leaders Nancy, net worth $48 million, Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer, the senator from Citibank? Are they capable of leading a real resistance against Trump? I don't think so. I mean, I think Melissa McCarthy, in her 7 minutes of spoofing Sean Spicer, has gotten under the nerves of the Trump administration more deeply than anything the Democrats have done. You know, their silly sleepover in the well of the Senate, and then to still lose the DeVos vote has to be humiliated.
It seems like there's a lack of, a triage mentality in terms of like where to devote your energy to. It seems like there's certain battles, if you know you're going to lose them, why not either conduct them differently or focus your energies differently?
I would have fought other people, because I don't think Betsy DeVos is actually a very dangerous, certainly not the most dangerous Trump cabinet member. The education department really doesn't have that much influence over education in the country. She's an incompetent figure, and she demonstrated herself as incompetent. Where was the protest against Arne Duncan, Obama's Secretary of Education, who believed every single thing that Betsy DeVos believes in? Charter schools, privatization, vouchers. No, he was celebrated as this great and lauded as a great, competent, bipartisan figure. And then what do we have? We have, you know, Chuck Schumer, and I think all but maybe two Democrats voted for Mad Dog Mattis to run the Pentagon. This is a man whose reputation, if you look at it, during the counterinsurgency program in Iraq was a war crime a day. And yet we hear the leaders of the Democratic Party, and I think, you know, even including Senator Sanders, voted for him. I think the only vote against him was Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, is that he's a rational figure. We have to support him because he's going to be a rational voice inside the Trump administration. And that's chilling. I mean, that is just chilling, because it really means that the leadership of the Democratic Party has learned nothing from this massive defeat. And it was a defeat not just of Hillary, but, you know, you had, they lost the Senate, which seemed to be in grasp for them. And, you know, I mean, you saw, I think, heroic Democrats like Russ Feingold going down in Wisconsin, and you saw neoliberal losers like Katie McGinty going down in Pennsylvania. And it's only going to get worse, you know, 2 years from now in the next senatorial election. So the question we need to ask is the old one, you know, that Lennon asked, not John, the other one. You know, what is to be done now?
Well, we will take that question up in another few minutes. My name is Paul Rowland. This is a Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm speaking with Jeffrey St. Clair. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff. And we're also talking about his new book, which he just read from, Bernie and the Sandinistas, Field Notes from a Failed Revolution, and talk about what lessons to learn as, you know, the so-called, the Sandinistas, but as those people do challenge the Democratic Party at a grassroots level, and the Democratic Party leadership retrenches from Florida to Oregon. So we'll talk about that and more. And we'll also talk to you about why and you need to support KBOO and how you can do it by calling 877-500-5266. And you can get a copy of this book, which we have available for a minimum $75 pledge. Right, Sam?
That is correct, Paul. And you mentioned this is KBOO's winter membership drive for 2017. And it's the membership that really provides the backbone for KBOO. And it's the strength of any organism is in diversity. And the need for our work in dismantling inequity within the broadcast industry is very well established. In a 2015 survey by the Radio Television Digital News Association in association with Hofstra University, found that radio broadcasters are overwhelmingly white. And now we in Portland know something about being overwhelmingly white. And people holding jobs in radio are also very more likely to be male. White males. Really kind of just... Oh, well, I'm just going to say that general managers in radio, about 17.3% are women. At KBOO, it's 50. How can we... And you want to support that. How do you do that? You do it by calling 877-500-5266. You do it online at kboo.fm/give. KBOO's got, you know, KBOO broadcasts more local news and public affairs than any other nonprofit radio station around, and several hours a week of Spanish language programs, as well as programs in Italian, Farsi, Yiddish, and Dutch. Right now, we're bringing you a program conducted mostly, in fact, almost exclusively in English. And that's possible because of your involvement, because of your contributions. 877-500-5266. KBOO facilitates public discourse and promotes democratic engagement. That's right. And empowers us. Residents, citizens, listeners, to communicate and organize, and has done so ever since June of 1968. Nearly 50 years of consistent broadcast for your benefit. Why not return the favor? 877-500-5266. We're going back to some more of what we're asking you to support, and why not make that call right now and keep it going? KBOO.FM/give or by telephone at 877-500-5266.
And thank you, Sam. And we are back. And this is a talk show. I know it's a little unwieldy during a membership drive to also accept call-ins. But if anyone has an urgent question or comment, the number is 503-231-8187. I'm speaking with Jeffrey St. Clair. So yeah, you know, what is the legacy of the Bernie Sanders campaign? As I said, there are challenges, grassroots challenges to the Democratic Party that are being mounted, and the serious counter reaction. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I gave a talk yesterday in Portland, about Sanders and the Democrats and where we are in the early hours of Trump time. I think that the point to recognize about, and the great hope, really, of the Sandinistas is that the Sandinistas preceded Bernie. Bernie did not build this movement. The movement pre-existed, and he became a temporary leader of it. And now the movement is going to exist as Sanders becomes an apparatchik of a neoliberal party. That's my hope, really. I don't, as a political leader, I don't really have much faith in Bernie. You know, he joined a neoliberal party. He essentially took his movement and put it right into the hands of the Clinton machine. And, you know, now there's a lot of pressure on Bernie. We'll see what happens. I mean, I hope the Sandinistas pressure him. You know, but the Democrats are desperate to get a hold of his email database. And, you know, I hope that that doesn't happen. But, you know, he's part of the Senate leadership now. And imagine the fact, Bernie Sanders essentially working for Chuck Schumer. That's, you know, I mean, I know Scott Fitzgerald said you have to keep two opposing ideas, you know, in your mind at the same time, but that really even just sort of strains credulity to me. But I think the challenge is, and is for the movement that coalesced around Sanders to continue to grow in the age of Trump and to not be restricted by the kind of political playpen that the Democratic Party establishment is going to want to restrict them to. And then more dangerously are the NGOs themselves, Sierra Club, you know, the Human Rights Campaign, you know, Planned Parenthood, whatever they are. And again, behind them, their funders and, you know, Pew Charitable Trust, W. Alton Jones, all these foundations that, you know, fund the left are going to want the great unwashed of the Sandinistas and others, the Greens, you know, all the people out on the streets to behave. They're going to want them to protest in certain ways for certain things.
Even in the face of whether you call it fascist, whether you call it authoritarian, I mean, the Steve Bannon and his ilk are somewhat of a different cut. You know, they're not all that different from they're allied to the Elliot Abrams and all the other slimy people that have, you know, been in the background for so long. But there's dangerous times, really.
I agree with you 100%, Paul, that, you know, the resistance should be fierce, uncompromising, and just it should just be unleashed from day one. And what I see happening now, look, you know, you go back, Adam Schiff, if you know him, he's a Democratic congressman, high-ranking congressman, California, he's being groomed for leadership position. He said to the Los Angeles Times last week that the worst side effect of the Trump election was the fact that it was, quote, radicalizing the Democratic base. Now, would that it were true, but this, you know, and I hope that in fact happens, and there may be signs that it is happening, but this is what the leadership of the party thinks of its base. And it reminded me of one of the most amusing interchanges from the Podesta emails, that were leaked by WikiLeaks, where you had Jake Sullivan, who is a longtime Clinton staffer and was working on the campaign, emailing to Neera Tanden from the Center for American Progress and, you know, one of the deep thinkers of the Democratic Party. And Sullivan, in this email to Tanden, said he was worried that the Clinton campaign was going to succumb to the Red Army faction of, of the Democratic Party and endorse the 15-hour minimum wage movement. And Camden writes back to him with a smiley face on her email saying, by Red Army faction, you mean the Democratic Party base, right? Ha, ha, ha. And this is really what they think. You know, this is the great fear of the neoliberals who run the Democratic Party, is that the Democrats, you know, might go far left. You know, the base might go far left and get totally out of control.
Oh, my gosh. It's always worse than we think.
Just terrible.
Well, listen, on that note, that really opens up the kind of conversation would be nice to have for another hour. Unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left, and we are at break time again, and we have a couple people called in. We'll get to them right after the break and basically just engage with them. So you are listening to Public Affairs here on Community Radio, KBOO, which comes out. We have a Public Affairs from 8 to 12 every weekday morning, and then again from 4 to 8 in the weekday evenings. And we are volunteers who do this programming and some programming that comes from afar, like Democracy Now! And some others. And we need money to get them on the air, and we need money to keep the station on the air. And in order to get those resources that we need, we have these membership drives a few times a year and call on you to directly express your support by calling the number 877-500-5266. And another of our volunteers, Sam, is also with us.
He is. He is with us. He is always with you, my friends. Every time you tune to a community radio station, I am there. 877-500-5266 is a way for you to be here, to be always with us. That's right. You know, as Paul mentioned, there's a lot of public affairs programming going on, and you gave a lot of great information, kind of general overview of the news and public affairs landscape at KBOO. And I want to speak now to people who are new to the area. That's right. A lot of you have arrived lately. Welcome to Oregon. Welcome to Portland. Welcome to KBOO. Well, I can't quite say that yet because you haven't yet called. But I'm going to say welcome to Sid in the St. John's area of Portland, a brand new member and an animal lover. So I bet he's a regular listener to Dab Stedman's Voice for the Animals. And KBOO is all about being a voice, or not so much being a voice for anyone, so much as making voices audible for everyone in the community. That's right, we're putting microphones in front of the voices so that you can hear them. And you know, that costs money, as Paul says. All the volunteers doing all the work here that brings you KBOO, brings you the signal that on which you rely, that runs up some pretty significant bills. And the way community radio works, my friends, is that the entire community pitches in so that to pay the bills incurred in making quality, innovative, cutting-edge, independent radio. So where do you fit in? You fit in by putting in, just you fit in at the part where we got to pay those bills. It's a burden that we all take on. Many hands make light lifting, they say. Many wallets make light funding. Everyone puts in just a little bit, a few pennies, nickels, and dimes a day. If you want to put in one penny, one nickel, and one dime a day, that works out to about $60 a year. So why not call? So you can call right now. Make a commitment. Participate in your radio station and in your community. Break that down on a monthly basis, $5 a month, 877-500-5266. You know, there's some folks who have been in the area for a while, have been listening for a while, and have been members for a while, just like David, a renewing member from the southeast part of town, and was listening to Amy Goodman this morning and realized how important it is to contribute. That's right. Apparently, he's known that for a while since he's a renewing member, and it probably just brought it home just a little more, how important it is to continue. That's right. Many folks will call once a year with their $60 contribution. That's great. Some other folks are going to call and set up a monthly commitment, $5 each and every month. And that's the really great thing about that, my friends, is that it keeps going. This renews itself on a monthly basis. You set it and forget it. You are done. 877-500-5266. There's a philosophy behind how to bring news and information and arts and culture programming, as well as just playing some really great music. There are many ways to do it. KABU's philosophy toward it is that the airwaves are part of the common treasury. This is something we all hold in common, and it belongs to all of us. As community broadcasters, it is our job to bring you rich content that is meaningful and relevant to you, regardless of its commercial value. Maybe it can make some. Maybe it can make a lot of money. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's what certain presidents would call losers. But that's okay, because whether or not it makes money is not what's important. What's important is that it's meaningful and relevant to you, the audience. Because KABU is funded by no one but you, the audience, it is beholden to no one but you, the audience. KABU is under no obligation to turn a profit, so it can focus entirely on bringing you stuff that's meaningful and relevant. It's KABU's different and proud of it. Homemade, handcrafted radio coming from the communities we serve. It serves you, the community, the listeners. We serve the communities we come from. I would run into our engineer this morning on the bus or at the grocery store. I run into Tuesday night Bhangra DJs on the street. These are the people in your neighborhood, in your neighborhood, in your neighborhood. We're going to go back to a little bit more to top this off with some of the participation of you and your friends and neighbors. So if you're not on hold waiting to speak on the air, make that call, 877-500-5266. If you are, do it online while you wait for your turn, kboo.fm/give.
All right. Thank you, Sam. And you have an opportunity to, if you like the perspective that Jeffrey St. Clair is offering, he has many books, but one of them is Burning the Sandinistas Field Notes from a Failed Revolution for a $75 minimum pledge. So give us a call at that number that you got. And we have one caller will be able to fit in. I believe Michael's waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Paul. Good morning, Jeff. This is Michael Donnelly. I was wondering what your take is on the fact that McConnell shut down Senator Warren for trying to read the Coretta King letter into the record. And yet, right after that, Senator Merkley did it to no opposition. Is that sexism? Do they fear Warren more than Merkley? And I think Merkley's much better at leading the resistance, certainly, than the senator from Citibank's Chuck Schumer. I just want to know what your take was on all that.
I think the Republicans fear Warren because she's, you know, on MSDNC every night. And the Republicans are also sexist. But I thought this morning, the first thing I thought is Jeff Sessions out of his safe space yet? I didn't know. I know that Warren, you know, reading Coretta Scott King, you know, set off a lot of trigger warnings for the Republicans. I think their main concern was that they had to, you know, they couldn't let her impugn, one senator for being a racist, because if they allowed her to do that, you know, where would you stop? I mean, you know, the entire august body itself might be, its reputation might be sullied. But I was proud of Merkley. You know, I like having him as a senator, compared to Ron the Weenie Wyden. Merkley's somebody, you know, you sort of run into at 7-Eleven the way, you know, we used to run into Tonya Harding here in Oregon City. I think a real person. And I think that he is well-placed to if they can reconstitute the Democratic Party as a more progressive political force, Merkley would be a good leader of that, I think. Better than Warren.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Michael. We only have a minute left. We didn't get to talk that much about Counterpunch. Just give us what's your view of Counterpunch and its importance in your life and the political life of the country?
Well, I don't know about the political life of the country, but it certainly it's taken over my life. It's fun to do. We're always pissing people off, which is, I think, the role of a truly independent press. We're an equal opportunity, voice. We attack, the left. We attack the right. We attack, the dead armadillos in the middle of the road.
Although you do consider yourself generally, generally leftist, and you're certainly considered leftist by many.
Yeah, I mean, we're leftists. I mean, we're not tied down to, party politics, which, frees us. We're free to criticize.
Okay, we got. Sorry to cut you off.
Party and to maybe praise. Praise Rand Paul when he launches filibuster.
And we got to go. We're right at the top of the hour. Sorry, I didn't realize we're so close to the end. Thank you so much, Jeffrey St. Clair, editor-in-chief of the website Counterpunch. This is Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of The Brainwashing of My Dad, examining the influence of right-wing media on individuals and the nation. The screening takes place on Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Jen Senko, who will be present at the screening, tries to understand the transformation of her father from a non-political, lifelong Democrat to an angry, right-wing fanatic, and asks questions about who owns the airwaves and what responsibility does the government have to keep the airwaves truly fair, accurate, and accountable to the truth. Again, The Brainwashing of My Dad, Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m., at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland.